So when I say 506B, I consider it like investing with your buddies. So B for buddy is the main way I say it. And that allows you to have almost like a friends and family model. These are people you're not allowed to like generally just advertise. You're not allowed to solicit to promote this. You should have a substantive pre-existing condition or relationship with all of your investors. Okay. And there's gray areas about that, and we can discuss how deep or what that means, but mainly you're not supposed to be advertising, and these are people that you're supposed to know and know really well.
But with a 506B, you do not have to be accredited to invest with your buddies. You have to be sophisticated. Sophisticated means, I guess, in the real sense, is you have to know that you're investing in something. It's not a guarantee, double your money in 5 years type thing. You know, you could potentially lose everything.
The concept's sophisticated. Obviously, you should have sufficient knowledge and experience in, business, maybe real estate, some type of financial stuff, and understand that you could lose money.
Welcome to the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast, where precision meets performance in commercial real estate. I'm your host, Jason Williams, and every week we deep dive into the strategies and systems and stories behind rock solid underwriting. Whether you're a seasoned analyst, an up-and-coming investor, or a commercial real estate professional looking to sharpen your edge, this show is your front row seat to expert insights, emerging trends, and real-world underwriting tactics that stand the test of time and scrutiny. From market assumptions to debt structuring, cap rates to cash flow, we're cutting through the noise and getting to the numbers that matter. So sharpen your pencils and fire up those models. Let's get to work. This is Ironclad Underwriting. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Williams. Again, I'm here with my good friend and business partner, Frank Padalano. How are you doing, Frank?
Good, sir. Just got back from visiting some properties and glad we have some time to spend together.
So, this episode, I wanted to talk briefly about how syndications like work with the SEC and everything, and what kind of filings you have to do, and what they mean, and what most syndicators will do. I mean, there's all sorts of different regulations you can abide by. Some cost a whole lot of money, some not so much money, but the most common offerings that I see are 506C and 506B. I know there's some like Reg A, Reg CF, Reg D, other things. I've never done any of those. I know a little bit about them. What's your take on those? Have you any experience with anything other than 506B or C?
I mean, 506B and C are the two main exemptions that people use to invest in real estate to make it an offering. And
Hold on, stop right there. I do want to do the disclaimer that we are not lawyers. We are not brokers, SEC anyway. We do file with the SEC, but that is about it. If you really want good legal advice, you need to consult a lawyer that you pay for. So,
there
all
you go.
right,
And
sorry to cut you off.
no, you're fine. You're fine. I mean, technically, we don't file everything with the SEC. We are using exemptions so that we don't have to fully file. So, I mean, whenever you put money into a real estate deal where you're not active, where you're just putting in the money and nothing else, you're passively investing. And obviously, the SEC would consider what we do or what people do with their money with us is investing in a security. So, there's the concept of an IPO. And doing it the full way, what we try to do is we try to do a one that's a lot less expensive, having exemptions by doing it a certain way.
Yeah, you still have to file with the SEC, whether it's like a 506C or B or the type of, I guess it's exemption or whatever it is. Like I said, I'm not a lawyer and I pay lawyers a lot of money to do it for me and to make sure that I'm in compliance.
I'm definitely not a lawyer.
But what is your take on the difference in a 506C and a 506B?
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know, I used to be a school teacher. So what I did is I took the letter B and I used a word to help me remember what it's about. So when I say 506B, I consider it like investing with your buddies. So B for buddy is the main way I say it. And that allows you to have almost like a friends and family model. These are people you're not allowed to like generally just advertise. You're not allowed to solicit to promote this. You should have a substantive pre-existing condition or relationship with all of your investors. Okay. And there's gray areas about that, and we can discuss how deep or what that means. But mainly, you're not supposed to be advertising, and these are people that you're supposed to know and know really well.
And there are some limitations. The buddy part opens it up to sophisticated investors versus accredited investors. And accredited investor, they have rules on the SEC website, but the main ones that I go off of is your net worth at least $1 million, excluding your house? Or do you make more than 200, is it 300? 200,000 or 300,000,
It's
depending if you're married.
$200,000 individually or $300,000 together with your spouse in the last 2 years,
And you
and
expect to
reasonably
make
expect the
it.
same in the current year.
And yeah, so there's some salary restrictions or net worth restrictions. And if you meet those, and there's some other things, you can take some SEC tests and become.
You're gonna have a professional license, Series 7, 65, 82, stuff like that.
And
But most
another.
importantly, though, for the accredited is that you only have to hit one of those. So most people that I know don't make more than $200,000 a year individually or make more than $300,000 a year with their spouse. Most people that I know. But many of them, just from investing, have a net worth of over $1 million, not including their house. So with that being said, they could be accredited even though they might only make $150,000 a year with their spouse.
And I wanted to point out it all is like location based too, because I know a lot of people in California meet the salary guidelines, but they don't meet the net worth.
Yeah,
And
so you
because
only
they
have to meet
just
one.
they meet the salary, because I mean California pays like really high salaries compared to Texas, especially compared to Wichita Falls, Texas. So but yeah, you only have to meet one. And I know people who, and if you buy a house in California back in, say, the 80s or 90s, and you sold it now, or yeah, if you sold it, you could make $1 million pretty easily. And then you can take that money and invest it in something else. Of course, you still need a place to live, assuming you're not living in California anymore. But I've seen that. I've seen people, many people do that before. They have a house and they lived in it for 30 years, sold it in California, and all of a sudden they're millionaires and can open up a whole lot of types of investing. But with a 506B, you do not have to be accredited to invest with your buddies. You have to be sophisticated. Sophisticated means, I guess, in the real senses, you have to know that you're investing in something. It's not a guarantee, double your money in 5 years type thing. You know, you could potentially lose everything. You have to understand that.
The concept's sophisticated. Obviously, you should have sufficient knowledge and experience in, business, maybe real estate, some type of financial stuff, and understand that you could lose money.
But there's
This is
like
definitely
no,
not gambling.
yeah, there's not real any guidelines on what makes you sophisticated versus just like a layman. I mean, theoretically, you can pull your uncle who doesn't know anything and get him to give you $50,000 somehow and invest it, and you would claim him as one of your sophisticated, and he might not know anything about what's going on with investments or anything like that. So he technically wouldn't be sophisticated, but you could go that route. I don't recommend going that route. You do want to know your investors. You want to know what situations they're in. And a lot of times with these investments, you're illiquid, meaning you don't have access to that money for
For
5 years
years.
sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you need that money to live, you can't invest it. It's yeah, I mean, you might get some cash flow from it, but if you're going to invest, say, 25, $50,000, if you're sophisticated, you might only be bringing in $200 of cash flow a month, maybe, if it's cash flowing. A lot of deals right now aren't cash flowing, and that's actually going the other way. You have to put more cash in. And that's another thing, is if you're invested in a deal and there's a capital call, you theoretically should put money into it, or your shares are going to be diluted and you're going to lose out and on the upside in the long run.
I would say that it's kind of like an LLC. It's a limited liability company. So your liability, if you put in $50,000 to start, if they have a capital call, yes, they can request you put more money in, but your liability is limited to the amount of money that you originally put in. So
you don't have to put it in, but and there's a lot of back and forth on that, and maybe capital calls would be a good discussion at a later time, because we could talk forever about it. Capital calls generally are not a good thing, but if you just need a little bit of money to get over a hump and you're doing a capital call and none of your investors put in, guess what? You're not getting over that hump, and you're going to probably lose everything the investors put in. So
So not to scare people necessarily. I mean, obviously there are specific situations on certain deals, and some deals are definitely not performing well. Back to 506B, you can have as many accredited investors that you like, as long as you have that pre-existing relationship with all of them. But on the sophisticated side, you're limited to about 35 sophisticated, up to 35 sophisticated investors.
Yeah. And you might think, oh, wow, 35 is a lot. Really, it all depends on the size of the deal. Some of our deals, we have 35 total investors. If that's the case, then it doesn't really matter how many sophisticated ones we have, because we're under that mark anyway. But if you have a deal where you're raising maybe $20 million and you're doing it through a 506B, then yeah, you will be approaching that 35 number really quickly. And if you hire, or if you get a fund to invest in you, and your fund has sophisticated investors, those sophisticated investors also count toward your 35.
Yes.
So you have to know who all is in the fund and if they're accredited or not. So I had a lawyer tell me that. It's like, we thought the fund came in as its own entity, and it does not. It comes in, it counts towards your 35 sophisticated. So
yeah, that's crazy. No, I have heard that before. I haven't experienced that yet, so I don't know how to see it through necessarily. But yeah, so 506B is still the standard way in which people raise money on syndications.
Yeah.
I think that's gradually changing. I see more and more people doing the newer method called 506C. Now, for me, like I said, since I used to be a teacher, when I say C, I like to say community, which means you can tell everybody about the deal, but only certain people can invest. So I'll let you talk more, and then I'll go in more if you, depending on
so,
how it goes.
So yeah, with a 506C, you can put it up on the billboards and have people drive by, and if somebody sees it and wants to invest and they're accredited, then you can say, you can take their money, sign them up, and shake their hand and be happy. But with a 506C, you cannot have any sophisticated investors. They all have to be accredited. So again, they all have to either have the salary requirement, or they have to have the net worth requirement, or the licensing requirement. So that is one stipulation on why you wouldn't just do 506Cs for everything, especially if your network is like your friends and family who are sophisticated and may not be the accredited. So
yeah, so obviously you often have to make a choice between the two. Like you're saying, the sponsor, and by the way, another difference is that, number one, you have to have verified accredited investors. And number two, the onus is on you as the sponsor or as the GP to make sure that those people are actually accredited. What some people do is they'll go with a third party. There are a few different verify investor websites, or you can also take an official letter from their accountant or their attorney, or their attorney, saying that they are accredited investors. And that's one of your jobs as a 506C is you have to hold on to those to if the case anything ever happens, to prove that these people were told what the deal was about. They read all the fine print, they signed it, and they had enough money that they could afford to take the risk being accredited investors.
Yeah, about those third party companies that will go and verify your accreditedness, I guess. What ends up happening is you go to their site. It's usually free for the investors. The GP team usually pays a fee for however many they have to verify. You go in, you sign up, and you pretty much have to upload a W-2. And if your W-2 shows that your salary is way too low, then they'll say, well, no, you need another form of verification. And you know what that other form of verification is? A letter from an accountant or an attorney. So, I don't have a W-2, so I don't have like normal salary. I'm not going to upload my 500 page tax documents to some third party, so I just get my attorney to write a letter for me. So anytime I go to one of those sites, I just upload the letter and be done with it. Now granted, those letters are only valid for 90 days. So you can get in on a deal with a letter, but then if there's another deal 6 months later, you're going to have another letter. And if you have a good attorney like mine or a good accountant, you can say, hey, I need a new letter. And they'll say, has anything changed? And say, yeah, my net worth went up 3 million or whatever. They say, okay, here's your letter. And if it goes down and it's below that 1 million mark, then they're going to be less accommodating, because I mean their license is on the line too, because they're saying yes, this person is valid. And if they get a letter from an attorney that's not valid, then bad things happen to that attorney. So, and or accountant. I use my attorney, not an accountant.
Yeah, everybody's different. I tend to use my accountant for the letter, not my attorney, because my accountant seems to know a lot more about what assets I actually have.
I send over my PFS to my attorney, but keep it up to date with him so he knows what I have.
There you go.
It's easier that way. PFS is a personal financial statement for those that don't know. And if you actually need it to get a loan on any property, like if you're a GP member going to sign a loan, you do have to send your bank to PFS. So you usually I keep mine updated a couple times a year. So that's why it's just easier to send them the PFS, same PFS I'm sending to lenders. So it all works out that way. Is there
With
anything
that being
else?
said, I mean, you talked about Reg A and you talked about crowdfunding. There is a large syndicator out there. GC is his initials. You've probably seen him invest in some Class A stuff a lot in Florida. He tends to
Ian
use Reg
Houston.
A. He tends to use Reg A for all of his investing or all of his capital raising. And it allows a larger group of people to be able to invest. You're able to advertise, and there's a larger and you've got a larger pool of people you can invest with.
Yeah, actually, I forgot to mention this, and I don't know all the rules. But with like a 506B, there's only a certain amount you can raise. And I don't remember what that raise amount is.
I don't know what it is either. We'll have to look that up.
We haven't hit it yet, but there is, it's like what, 10 million, 5 million, something like that. I don't remember. Like I said, I'm not a lawyer, so I keep my lawyer on call for things like this.
I don't. I'm gonna argue with you. I think it's unlimited on a 506B.
I don't think
I
so.
think a CF has a limitation, and I think an A has a limitation, but not a B.
I'm going to look it up right quick.
No, you do that. Back to so like I said, Grant. I'm pretty sure uses a Reg A or a Reg A plus. They might even call it stuff like that in order to raise money. It's a little more expensive, I think, to do it that way, but it also gives you a lot more options where you can advertise and take in non-accredited investors.
Okay, so 506B, it looks like it's unlimited. I think as maybe CF crowdfunding is 5 million. With a Reg A, and I could be wrong with this. This, I mean, it's open to the public, like you said, but it also allows you to get people to invest like $5,000 who normally wouldn't be able to invest. So then I think the number of sophisticated investors is maybe higher or unlimited. I'm not sure. But
I bet it's probably unlimited.
The price difference to file these is for 506B versus a 506C, the cost is negligible. It's going to be pretty much the same. Which I think is what, like 10 to 15,000 with a lawyer. With a Reg A, you're looking at a minimum of 75,000. So you need to have like substantial deals to be able to make that financially sound. One option that we have been seeing a lot of lately is a lot of people will open up a deal to 506B, and then after like 30 days, they'll switch it to a 506C. And what this does is it opens it up to sophisticated investors before they advertise, but those investors have to be locked in before it switches over to a 506C. I haven't done that, so I don't know all the regulations on it, but I do know that you have to pay like maybe like 1.5 times the cost instead of like 2 times to switch from 506B to a 506C.
I'm pretty sure that you have to have all the money that you're going to raise on the B side. It has to be collected before you can start raising a dollar on the C side. You know, yeah. The B side has to be completely shut down. And I've heard different attorneys give me different numbers, but for safety's sake, some people give it a week between closing the B and opening the C.
I mean, I can see that. Yeah. And really, is it like waiting for all the money to come in, or do you cut it off and say, all right, you can't invest with us anymore type thing? I mean, ultimately, it's both, but
yeah. Eventually, there's definitely a cutoff. Yeah, where you're not allowed to put any more in.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, you're right. The CF, the crowdfunding itself, is the one that has a limit on how much you can raise on one.
And that's like $5 million or something.
$5 million, yeah. And okay. It also limits how much you can, how much one investor can put in, especially based on their net worth. So they're not allowed to put in more than. On the lower side, they're not allowed to put in more than $2,500 or 5% of their net worth.
Okay.
Or annual income.
Well, there you go.
So, but, you know, crowdfunding is pretty cool. I've heard it's more expensive. I haven't done it yet, but I have had a few friends do them. I had one person I know that did a decent-sized deal in Las Vegas, and they did a 506C and CF at the same time. So they limited like what the exposure was on the CF side, because you got a $5 million max.
Yeah.
And so then they could, it was strange. It was definitely more expensive, but I'm pretty sure they were able to basically raise from accredited and non-accredited investors while advertising at the same time.
Okay. And I guess if they're investing, are they investing in Vegas or getting people from Vegas to invest, or both?
No, it was a deal in Vegas.
Okay. Yeah, Vegas has a lot of money, or can have a lot of money. So,
no, this was an affordable housing play for people who actually it was to help. It was actually supported as well, even by the city government. The city government worked with them to provide housing for homeless.
Oh, that's cool.
It was a great situation. I don't know if you ever heard about it. I'll have to send you some information on it. It was a cool deal. It took them a while to raise. But it worked out.
Yeah. I don't know anything about it. So why don't you can forward me that information. I'll check it out.
It was like a 300 bed situation.
Okay, cool. Is there anything else on 506C versus 506B?
I mean, I know there's a couple other smaller ones as well, but I did have an attorney tell me at one point that over 90% of syndications are 506B or 506C.
Yeah, and then probably because they're the most cost-effective and the easiest to do, easiest to make sure you're within the specifications and guidelines to be My mind just went blank. To
That's
be
okay. I mean,
compliant.
yeah, there's a lot of rules for it. Some people complain about all the rules. But if you go back to like the Roaring Twenties, before they had the Securities and Exchange Commission, they were, we'll call them snake oil salesmen, people selling alligator land in Florida, people selling crazy fake deals and everything else. And one way or another, the government tried to figure out a way to protect investors a little bit.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of rules to do it.
And the SEC also, they go after the bad apples too. So if there's anyone committing fraud or treating investors badly, they're going to sometimes go after those people. Maybe try and reclaim some of the money that was lost if there's what lost money or what have you. So I mean, they look out for the investors all around, and that's what their entire role is. So.
Yeah, one final thing I'll add real quick is when we talk about these 506Bs, I'm part of a lot of different networking groups and real estate groups, and there are some people that they need to be really careful about what they send in those groups because you could have a phone tree, whether it's a phone tree of say 300 people, and you might think that because you guys are all part of the same network, part of the same real estate investing program, that you can send out a post. And it's like, no, you can't. You need to have a pre-existing relationship with the people, with every single person in that group, if you were going to do that. And it's pretty hard to have a group list of hundreds of people. You know, maybe a couple hundred people is possible, but to have a 506B list of 20,000 people just sounds impossible to me.
Yeah. And also, during like some of those conferences and meetups and stuff where people are like, hey, do you have a deal you want to talk about? You and I both know of cases where people have gotten up on stage in an auditorium and pitched their deal and found out later it was a 506B. That is a big no-no. That you can't pitch it on a stage, you can't post about it on social media. Saying, hey, look, I'm raising for a deal. You can't do anything. It's all pretty much hush hush.
I was laughing because we both said no at the same time.
And also, so, and then there gets to be some gray areas. It's like, well, what if I don't have a deal yet and I'm trying to meet investors, but what do I do? It's like, let's say if I had a deal, and this is a big if, it's like I don't have a deal, but if I had a deal, would you be interested in investing? And theoretically, that could work. But if you knew you're about to be under contract in a week and you did that, then that would be a big no-no as well. So, I mean, that there's gray areas. It's all a lot about it. It's timing. And again, consult your lawyer to get more information, make sure you're compliant. Don't pitch any 506Bs, social media, billboards, up on stage, anything.
People you don't
Hell,
know.
I don't even know if you can talk about it with someone in like a hallway and then have somebody else overhear you type thing. I don't even know if that would work.
I would
So,
try to avoid it.
yeah. So with that in mind, if you have any other questions, if you need to know, find out some good lawyers who can answer your questions, you can reach out to me, Jason Williams, Ironclad Underwriting. I'm on whatever platform you're listening to this on. I'm on YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, ironcladunderwriting.com. You can join our community and get a lot of free resources, learn more about 506C, 506B, have discussions with other people in our community. And if you have anything else, Frank, nope, we'll catch you next time. See ya. Bye. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Ironclad Underwriting Podcast. If you got value from today's conversation, make sure to subscribe, rate, and share the show. And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or check us out at our website at ironcladunderwriting.com for more insights and updates. If you have a question, a deal you're analyzing, or a topic you want us to tackle, shoot us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep your assumptions grounded, your model sharp, and your underwriting ironclad.